Have you ever wondered what happens when you leave a comment online? Perhaps you've posted a review on Amazon, left feedback on a YouTube video, or engaged in a heated Twitter debate. In these moments, you're participating in a vast ecosystem of digital commentary that shapes our modern world in profound ways. Joseph M. Riegel Jr.'s Reading the Comments, Likers, Haters, and Manipulators at the Bottom of the Web takes us on a fascinating journey through this often overlooked terrain of online interaction. This book arrived at a critical moment in our digital evolution. As social media platforms became central to our lives, the quality of online discourse was deteriorating rapidly. The New York Times called it one of the most insightful examinations of internet culture in 2015, while tech influencer Alexis Ohanian, Reddit co-founder, praised it as essential reading for anyone trying to understand modern communication. What makes Riegel's analysis so compelling is his ability to see beyond the surface-level toxicity to examine how comments inform us, improve us, manipulate us, alienate us, and ultimately shape our identities in the digital age. Don't read the comments. This familiar warning speaks to a common perception that online comments represent the worst of humanity, a cesspool of hatred, ignorance, and trolling. Yet these comments, despite their tarnished reputation, have become an inescapable part of our digital experience. Comments are reactive, short, and asynchronous communications that follow something else. They appear below YouTube videos, news articles, and social media posts. While they're not new in form, people have been writing in the margins of books for centuries, their ubiquity in digital spaces makes them worthy of serious examination. The paradox of comment is that it's simultaneously everywhere and invisible. We see comments constantly, but rarely think about them critically. Even when we appreciate helpful reviews or thoughtful feedback, most of us don't realize how extensively comment is manipulated for profit and influence. Facebook like farms exploit our engagement, while companies pay for fake reviews that shape our purchasing decisions. To understand why online communities often struggle with comments, we need to consider human cognitive limitations. Anthropologist Robin Dunbar argues that our large brains evolved primarily to track complex social relationships through gossip, what he calls evaluative social chat that helps forge alliances. This requires a sophisticated theory of mind where humans can infer others' mental states. Dunbar's famous number of 150 represents the cognitive limit of relationships humans can meaningfully maintain. This corresponds to early farming communities, church congregations, and military companies. It also provides a crucial clue to why comment frequently fails on the web. Humans struggle to maintain meaningful discourse beyond their cognitive social limits. When online communities grow beyond this threshold, quality often deteriorates. Even Dave Weiner, often credited with deploying the first blog comments in 1998, eventually disabled them on his own blog after years of conflict. He argued that comments aren't essential to blogs and can interfere with the natural expression of the unedited voice of an individual. Many popular sites have followed suit, either temporarily or permanently disabling comments when they become unmanageable. As online communities grew, they developed various strategies to combat comment abuse. Some implemented user-based moderation systems like Slashdot's ratings and meta-moderation. Others required real names, as with Facebook and Google+, hoping accountability would improve behavior. Some platforms charge small fees. Metafilter's one-time $5 payment, combined with strong community norms, created a relatively healthy comment culture. As Clay Shirky wisely noted, comment systems can be good, big, cheap. Pick two. Smaller communities with careful moderation tend to have better comments, but successful communities inevitably grow, creating a paradox where popularity undermines quality. This explains the constant migration between platforms as users search for what Riegel calls intimate serendipity, that sweet spot of meaningful connection with unexpected people. Early blogging meetups in 2003 involved small groups of enthusiasts having good conversations. A decade later, such gatherings seemed passé. Networks initially benefit from growth. A network of 5 phones permits 10 connections, 10 phones permit 45, but eventually reach Dunbar's cognitive limit, where scale overwhelms participants. Twitter initially offered this intimate serendipity. Early users felt thrilled by celebrity encounters and the ability to authentically express themselves. Research shows people spend 30-40% of interactions telling others about personal experiences, with Harvard neuroscientists finding self-disclosure triggers the brain's dopamine reward system. People will even pay a 17% tax for the privilege of talking about themselves. But as platforms grow, they become targets for exploitation. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails initially embraced Twitter to lower the curtain and show more personality than possible on moderated forums. However, by 2009, the metal sludge contingency of vitriolic fans discovered Twitter, driving him to largely abandon the platform. Unlike email with private addresses and filters, Twitter handles are public, making them vulnerable to tweet bombs and harassment campaigns. In our consumer culture, comments often function as reviews that guide purchasing decisions. Louis C.K. perfectly captured the modern consumer's dilemma in a comedy bit about the absurdity of obsessively researching the best product. This paradox of having too much information creates what psychologists call maximizers, people who must optimize every decision, often spending hours reading reviews, only to feel disappointed when products fall short of expectations. Reviews have ancient roots in human commentary. Just as Babylonians created dictionaries for Sumerian texts, and ancients developed scholia to help decipher texts lacking vowels and punctuation, modern reviews help us navigate consumer choices. During the Enlightenment, the proliferation of books led Leibniz to complain of the horrible mass of books that keeps on growing, spawning new forms of commentary like comprehensive indexes and discriminating reviews. The star rating system represents the compression of expression to its essence, a simple judgment of quality. This system has historical precedent. Michelin began rating restaurants with stars in the 1920s, eventually settling on the 3-star system we know today, with meanings as modest as worth a detour, 2 stars, or worth a journey, 3 stars. Facebook's Like button, launched in April 2010, represented an even greater compression of expression. Mark Zuckerberg predicted over 1 billion uses in its first day. Though unsubstantiated, the feature's impact was evident, as competitors quickly followed with alternatives like Google's +1 button. Different reviewing approaches have emerged to serve different needs. Digital photography forums like DP Review epitomize the engineer's approach, offering exhaustive 20-plus page reviews with charts, cables, and sample images. This technical approach traces back to early 20th century engineers like Frederick Taylor and Stuart Chase, who applied scientific methods to economic and social reform. Their work led to the founding of Consumer Research in 1929 and eventually Consumer Reports, which maintains this engineering legacy with rigorous testing and statistical accuracy. In contrast, Kevin Kelly's Cool Tools blog exemplifies the Liker approach, celebrating tried and true items that really work. This ethos, from the original Whole Earth catalog through Boing Boing and Cool Tools, represents the idea that sharing reviews can be a personal offering, reflecting one's enthusiasms and experiences for others' benefit, even when reviewing something as mundane as an egg timer or pencil sharpener. While reviews can be tremendously helpful, they're increasingly compromised by fakery and manipulation. Research reveals the alarming scale of this problem. Computer scientists have developed models showing that about 1/3 of all consumer reviews may be fake. Analysis of over 610,000 book reviews found suspicious patterns, suggesting approximately 10.3% of products studied were subject to manipulation. Similarly, analysis of Boston restaurant reviews found 16% were filtered by Yelp as potentially fraudulent. Unlike spam, fake reviews are deliberately deceptive rather than merely annoying. The practice of writing fake reviews bloomed alongside the review genre itself. 18th century botanists like Linnaeus wrote self-congratulatory reviews, calling his own work a masterpiece that can never be read and admired enough. Literary figures from Walter Scott to Walt Whitman and Anthony Burgess similarly engaged in anonymous self-promotion. Today's fake review economy operates at various price points and sophistication levels. Budget options include overseas review sweatshops and tech-savvy homeless people earning money through sites like Bitcoin Get. American reviewers typically charge $5 to $20 per review, with sophisticated operations requiring reviewers to post varied ratings over time from unique accounts to avoid detection. The payoff can be substantial. Author John Locke purchased 300 reviews for his self-published books before selling millions of copies and securing a Simon & Schuster distribution deal. As Marilyn Strathern observed, when a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. The arms race between comment systems and manipulators is perfectly exemplified by CAPTCHAs, those distorted text puzzles designed to distinguish humans from bots. As automated scripts became sophisticated enough to solve CAPTCHAs, the puzzles grew increasingly difficult, frustrating legitimate human users. This led to services like Death by CAPTCHA offering 1,000 solutions for just $1.39, claiming 90% accuracy within 15 seconds. Not all comments are reviews. Many function as feedback intended to help others improve. The fear of public criticism ranks among our most common anxieties, yet feedback is essential for growth. Organizations like Toastmasters International address this anxiety by creating supportive environments where evaluators avoid the three C's, criticize, complain, condemn, and instead perform the three R's, review, reward, recommend. Fan fiction communities have developed a sophisticated culture of feedback through beta reading, borrowed from computing's concept of beta testing software. These amateur writers have created a nuanced vocabulary for different types of commentary, distinguishing between concrete, constructive criticism with specific improvement suggestions, commentary, reader response for the author, review, commentary intended for other readers, and flaming, hurtful, non-productive commentary. Even well-intentioned feedback can be difficult to give and receive. Common pitfalls include focusing on the person rather than the work, making broad generalizations, and complaining without suggesting improvements. The sandwich technique, praise, critique, then praise again, is widely recommended. Research confirms these community practices. Destructive criticism undermines confidence and performance, while novices respond better to positive feedback and experts to constructive criticism. At PhotoNet, one of the web's oldest photography communities, members debate the appropriateness of tweak critique, making direct alterations to others' photographs as feedback. While some view it as the site's most valuable feature, others find it presumptuous. The community generally respects explicit requests not to alter photos and recommends adding watermarks to tweaked versions to avoid confusion with originals. The concept of direct editing extends beyond photography into software development, where version control systems track revisions and allow easy reverting of problematic changes. Developers prefer receiving actual code patches rather than bug reports, finding direct fixes more efficient. However, this can lead to harsh criticism in communities like Linux, where maintainer Linus Torvalds embraced public mockery as half the fun of open-source programming. Online anonymity creates distinct psychological effects. Plato's Ring of Gyges story questioned whether invisibility corrupts the just, while modern research shows people behave differently when unidentifiable. Zimbardo's experiments demonstrated that hooded participants administered more shocks than those wearing name tags, and studies of trick-or-treating children showed anonymous groups cheated more frequently. Online, this manifests as internet balls or the internet fuckwad theory, where normal people become aggressive when anonymous with an audience. While some trolling stems from contextual factors affecting good people, research indicates a small percentage, 5.6%, actively enjoy trolling and score high on sadism measures, representing bad people acting up rather than good people in bad environments. Gender dynamics play a crucial role in online harassment. Susan Herring's research shows only about 5% of posters, mostly men, generate most adversarial rhetoric. While both genders value politeness, these men prioritize freedom of expression over consequences, acting as self-appointed vigilantes on the virtual frontier. This explains the frequent invocation of free speech arguments, mockingly called freeze peach, to justify harassment. The PyCon dongle incident exemplifies how online comment can spiral out of control. After Adria Richards tweeted a photo of men making inappropriate jokes at a tech conference, she faced horrific harassment, including racist and sexist slurs, rape, and death threats. Media scholar Emma Jane characterizes such ebile as featuring profanity, ad hominem attacks, stereotyping, and hyperbolic imagery of sexualized violence. The relationship between authors and reviewers on Goodreads exemplifies another battleground in online comment culture. Goodreads positions itself as both a reader community and author promotion platform, creating an inherently unstable dynamic where authors inevitably overhear readers' candid opinions about their work. This led to the creation of the Stop the Goodreads Bullies STGRB site, which controversially outed critical reviewers by publishing their personal information. Beyond informing or alienating us, comments actively shape our sense of self. Online comment isn't simply an external annoyance, but often an emotionally significant part of constructing one's social identity. While traditional theory suggests seeing oneself, as in a mirror, diminishes self-esteem, research shows viewing one's Facebook profile actually enhances it, especially when users can edit their presentation. The selfie phenomenon exemplifies this control over self-presentation, though people remain uncomfortable with unflattering photos posted by others. Some, like frequent social media user Triana Levy, even pursue cosmetic surgery after becoming self-conscious about features in Facebook photos. I think social media has really changed so much about how we look at ourselves and judge ourselves. Social comparison affects well-being in the digital age. South Koreans, among the most wired people globally, have high rates of cosmetic surgery, suggesting media exposure influences beauty standards. Drawing on Robert Frank and Philip Cook's winner-take-all society, global competition diminishes well-being as people compare themselves to world-class successes. Facebook usage correlates with feelings of dissatisfaction and envy, the FOMO, fear of missing out phenomenon, as users passively consume others' carefully curated lives. Research shows people typically overestimate others' happiness because negative emotions are hidden in social settings, creating a spiral of self-promotion and envy. Studies reveal a small but significant decline in mood following Facebook use. The rise of selfies, sexting, and reality TV has sparked concerns about increasing narcissism. Headlines regularly question if social media is creating narcissists. While popular usage of narcissism loosely means self-obsessed, clinical definitions are more precise. Narcissists crave success and admiration, but respond to threats with rage. The narcissistic paradox is that they seek self-affirmation in ways that destroy their relationships. Society increasingly embraces quantification as a surrogate for quality assessment, transforming subjective experiences into measurable data points. Sociologist George Ritzer noted this trend in 1983, observing that McDonald's-style rationalization was reshaping society through efficiency, predictability, and calculability. This McDonaldization process has since accelerated, spreading from fast food to healthcare, education, and personal relationships. Quality is notoriously difficult to evaluate, while computers excel at counting, leading to quantifiable measures for everything from hamburgers to physicians, teacher effectiveness scores to hospital rankings. What distinguishes modern rationalization is that the assessment of people has been democratized through countless online sources. Review platforms like Yelp and TripAdvisor have made everyone a critic, while LinkedIn endorsements and Rate My Professor scores reduce professional capability to star ratings. Clout attempted to quantify social influence by processing signals from multiple networks to compute a single score, Obama, 99, Bieber, 92. The platform analyzed over 400 variables across social networks to determine influence, including retweets, likes, and comments. Critics like Ron J. Miller argued that clout sold the lie that social influence and connectedness can be measured quantitatively, benefiting advertisers rather than users. The platform's eventual shutdown in 2018 highlighted the limitations of reducing human complexity to numerical scores. Modern dating exemplifies our obsession with quantification. Men still rate women on the Bo-Derek scale, particularly in the seduction community, where discussions include decimal ratings of hot babes. Dating apps like Tinder and Bumble have transformed romance into a numbers game, with algorithms matching users based on data points and swipe patterns. Dating services increasingly optimized for efficiency, from online profiles to PowerPoint parties where daters have 6 minutes to pitch themselves, complete with slides and metrics about their dating history and relationship goals. Speed dating events often include scorecards and rating systems, reducing chemistry to checkboxes and numerical scores. Even friendship has been quantified. Burger King's 2008 Whopper Sacrifice campaign offered a free sandwich to people who unfriended 10 Facebook connections, with 23,000 people participating before Facebook shut down the promotion. Social media platforms now provide detailed analytics about friendship interactions, including engagement rates, response times, and interaction frequencies. Instagram and Twitter followers have become a currency of social worth, while Facebook's algorithm determines which friends' posts we see based on quantified interaction patterns. This metrics-driven approach to relationships reflects a broader cultural shift toward valuing what can be measured over what might be meaningful but resistant to quantification. Online comments often leave us confused and amused, bemused, as expressed through the common exclamation, WTF. This bewilderment reflects a fundamental disconnect between how different people interpret and express value online. People's puzzling rating choices reveal the vast gap between our expectations and others' reasoning systems, highlighting how personal experience shapes digital interaction. A viral review giving 4/5 stars to a carbon monoxide detector that saved our son's life sparked widespread parodies and confusion across social media platforms. Many wondered why a life-saving device wouldn't merit a perfect score. The actual reviewer, KB, maintained a consistent rating philosophy across hundreds of reviews, evaluating products solely on quality and durability concerns, regardless of their life-saving potential or emotional impact. This systematic approach, while logical to KB, challenged others' intuitive understanding of rating scales. Rating systems continue to confound us with their arbitrary scales and ambiguous meanings. The medical pain scale, ranging from 1 to 10, particularly frustrates both medical professionals and patients. Comedian Brian Regan hilariously captured this dilemma when describing his hospital experience. Unable to claim a 10, reserved for broken femurs, or 9, childbirth, he reluctantly settled on 8 to justify receiving morphine. This highlights how symbols mean radically different things to different people. While some view 6 out of 10 as slightly positive, others interpret it as nearly failing. Cultural differences further complicate these interpretations, with some countries viewing 70% as excellent, while others consider it barely passing. Product reviews have evolved beyond mere consumer guidance into a medium for collective amusement and cultural commentary. Countless products attract comical reviews on Amazon, becoming subjects of viral funniest or stupidest review listicles. The Three Wolf Moon t-shirt phenomenon exemplifies this trend. after law student Brian Govern's satirical review went viral, claiming the shirt granted him mystical powers and romantic success, the product spent nearly 200 days on Amazon's top 100 list. The review sparked thousands of similar creative submissions, leading Amazon to eventually acknowledge these entertainment-focused reviews with a dedicated Funny Reviews page. Sometimes online comments reveal unexpected sociological phenomena that reshape our understanding of human experience. The Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR, emerged entirely through online comments, beginning with a 2009 forum post where someone described a really nice feeling triggered by watching an unboxing video. This sparked hundreds of responses from others experiencing similar tingling sensations, previously thought to be unique personal experiences. This comment-driven discovery led to numerous research projects, specialized YouTube channels with millions of subscribers, and mainstream recognition of ASMR as a genuine physiological response. The phenomenon demonstrates how digital spaces enable people to identify and validate shared experiences that might otherwise remain isolated and unnamed. Despite the maxim, never read the comments, online commentary remains both compelling and problematic. Like watching the game show Family Feud, reading comments offers insight into what people are thinking, right or wrong, offensive or trite, making us confront the reality that we have met the commenter and he is us. New approaches to comment systems continue to emerge. Lawrence Lessig praised Medium.com's annotation-style comments. Jeff Atwood, co-founder of Discourse, argues that successful platforms must suppress discussion to maintain signal-to-noise ratio, noting that if you are unwilling to moderate your online community, you don't deserve to have an online community. Ta-Nehisi Coates similarly compares comment moderation to gardening. Once you take out the rubbish and clear away the weeds, flowers begin to grow. As online discussion struggles with scammers and haters, commenting systems continuously fortify against abuse while new platforms emerge as people search for intimate serendipity, spaces for authentic self-expression without fear of attack. Alternatively, some simply withdraw. Even Dave Weiner, credited with deploying the first blog comments, eventually disabled them, concluding they're not worth the trouble. Comment has become an inescapable characteristic of contemporary life. It can inform, improve, and shape people positively, but also alienate, manipulate, and harm. Rather than broad polemics about technology's wonders or perils, we must find ways to use comment effectively. Can we develop policies and technologies supporting our highest ideals? Can we cultivate self-esteem based on improvement rather than flattery? Can we occasionally disconnect? These aren't rhetorical questions, but essential ones requiring mindfulness. Just as good communities need moderation, individuals benefit from setting intentions when going online rather than sleepwalking through digital spaces. Comment is only as commentarable as we allow it to be, and understanding it requires reading the comments at the bottom of the web.